is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suwuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So in this report, we're drawing attention to three issues of growing concern: noise in our cities, wildfires under climate change, and phenology shifting the rhythm of nature.
That is Andrea Hinwood, the chief scientist of the UN Environment Program, on growing environmental risks it will be considering at a meeting next week. Details coming up. Also, Ethiopia has started generating electricity from the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam it is building on the Blue Nile. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. A new report by the UN Environment Program, UNEP, says a fast-warming planet is fostering record-breaking wildfires sweeping across the world, while urban noise pollution is growing into a global public health menace. The report, titled Noise, Blazes, and Mismatches: Emerging Issues of Environmental Concern, was released days before the resumed fifth session of the UN Environment Assembly, UNEA, which opens in Nairobi next week. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
The critical findings requiring greater attention are highlighted in the latest edition of the Frontiers Report, first published in 2016, with an alert to the growing risk of zoonotic diseases 4 years before the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic. Andrea Hinwood is the chief scientist at UN Environment Programme, UNEP.
Our Frontiers Report series aims to put the spotlight on key and emerging environmental issues, those that potentially have huge effects on our society, economy, and ecosystems. So in this report, we're drawing attention to three issues of growing concern: noise in our cities, wildfires under climate change, and phenology shifting the rhythm of nature.
She said the issues highlight the urgent need to address the triple planetary crisis of climate change, pollution, and biodiversity loss. David De Silva is Canada's acting High Commissioner to Kenya.
Canada is well referenced in this new report, not only with examples of how climate change affects the monarch butterfly or the migration of whales, but also sadly regarding my hometown of Toronto, or wildfires that we in Canada are experiencing more and more. The implications of climate change and other threats to nature are already widely felt. 1 million species facing risk of extinction globally. In Canada, we have over 600 species that are formally listed as species at risk, many owing in part to risks from a changing climate.
The new report says each year between 2002 and 2016, an average of about 423 million hectares of the Earth's land surface, an area about the size of the entire European Union, burned, becoming more common in mixed forest and savanna ecosystems. An estimated 67% of the annual global area burned by all types of fires, including wildfires, was of the African continent. The report was released ahead of the UN Environment Assembly, UNEA, to be aired on February 28th through March 2nd. It also highlights the hidden cost of noise pollution, as Martin Capel, head of Thematic Assessments Unit at UNEP, explains.
Recent research has revealed long-term exposure to noise pollution causes mental and physical health problems in humans across all age groups. It is a major and growing environmental issue that requires the attention of policymakers in multiple sectors of society. To give you just one example, long-term exposure to noise in Europe, for instance, contributes to at least 12,000 premature deaths per year.
Capel says the report encourages urban planners to prioritize noise reduction by investing in urban infrastructure that creates positive soundscapes such as tree belts, green walls, and more green spaces in cities.
Now, in many big cities in the global north and south, people are exposed daily to high levels of noise. Some examples are Barcelona, Cairo, Hong Kong, New York, Toronto, Nairobi, Jakarta.
The UN Environment Assembly, UNEA, is the world's most powerful decision-making body on the environment and responsible for tackling some of the most critical issues of our time. Starting next Monday, hundreds of key decision makers, businesses, and representatives of intergovernmental organizations and civil society will gather in the Kenyan capital for the second part of UNEA 5. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Ethiopia has started generating electricity from the controversial mega dam being built on the Blue Nile. The milestone was reached yesterday morning when one of the 13 turbines of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam started power generation in an event officiated by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. The dam will be Africa's largest hydroelectric dam upon completion, with a generating capacity of 6,500 megawatts. It has been a source of tension between Ethiopia, Sudan, and Egypt. Egypt fears a quick filling of the dam will reduce its share of Nile waters. Egypt's foreign ministry said yesterday that Ethiopia's move is another breach of the agreement of principles that the three countries signed in 2015. A new seasonal forecast for the drought-stricken Horn of Africa shows many parts of the region can expect a good rainy season. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The forecast by the World Meteorological Organization is good news for millions of people suffering acute hunger because of poor harvest due to several years of consecutive drought. However, WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says that good news is coupled with warnings that people should still prepare for what she calls a worst-case scenario.
The March to May rainy season is really, really important for many countries in the region. It accounts for about 70% of the total annual rainfall. And so obviously, if there were to be a renewed failure of the rains, there would be massive socioeconomic consequences.
The World Food Programme says 12 to 14 million people in three of the worst affected countries, Somalia, Kenya, and Ethiopia, are facing severe hunger due to the devastating drought across the Horn of Africa. The WMO says southern to central parts of the region have the highest chances of receiving more rain than normal at this time of year. Countries include Tanzania, eastern Uganda, northern Burundi, and eastern Rwanda. However, it says western South Sudan and central and northeastern Ethiopia are likely to receive less rain than usual. Given the below-average rainfall the past three seasons, meteorologists say a wetter-than-normal season does not mean the region will immediately recover from the impacts of drought. Nullis says countries in the eastern part of the Horn should prepare for the worst.
In the regions worst hit by drought, the current trends are comparable to those observed during the 2010 to 2011 famine and the 2016 to 2017 drought emergency. There's obviously a delay in between planting and harvesting. Next harvests don't start till about August, and so, you know, we're not going to see any immediate positive impact.
More than 250,000 people died in the Somalia famine between 2010 and 2012, more than half children. More than 6 million people, half of Somalia's population, were ravaged by the severe 2017 drought. Few people died, though, because the international community responded quickly to the acute hunger emergency. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A Nigerian military airstrike targeting bandits has killed 7 children and injured 5 others in the southern part of neighboring Niger. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
A local governor of the Maradi region near Nigeria, Chaibu Abubakar, confirmed the incident to the French news agency on Sunday. Abubakar said the strike occurred on Friday in the village of Nakadi and that 4 of the children died instantly while 3 others died on their way to the hospital. He said, quote, "There was a mistake with the Nigeria strikes on the border that resulted in victims in our territory," end quote. Abubakar visited the children's graves on Saturday and said the Nigerian military planes were combing the area for bandits, local criminal gangs operating in northwest Nigeria who kill people or kidnap them for ransom. Nigeria's Director of Defense Information, Jimmy Akpor, says an investigation is underway. He said, quote, "As a matter of policy, the Nigerian Air Force does not make any incursions into areas outside Nigeria's territorial boundaries," end quote. Criminal gang activity has unleashed terror in the region since late 2020. Nigerian authorities have been cracking down. Bandits fleeing military raids in Nigeria often migrate north towards Niger. The Maradi region in Niger is one of the most affected by the violence created by bandits in the neighboring Katsina, Sokoto, and Zamfara states in Nigeria. The Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has tried to create a joint task force to prevent fleeing criminals from taking refuge elsewhere in the region. In 2018, Niger ramped up security around its border with Nigeria to prevent gangs from gaining entry. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
A new report from the Norwegian Refugee Council says persistent attacks and threats against schools in the central Sahel are driving alarming levels of stress among children in conflict-affected areas. The survey of over 600 children in conflict areas in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger reveals that over half of all students do not feel safe at school. Mavis Ochera in Juwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana has more on the story.
The new report finds that conflict is having a heavy psychological impact on children, affecting their behavior and learning capacity. This, as almost two-thirds of the children surveyed have little to no hope for their future. Currently, over 5,500 schools in the three countries are closed due to insecurity, which has driven 13 million students out of school. Marini Olivasi is the advocacy manager in Burkina Faso for the Norwegian Refugee Council. She says a school in the eastern part of the country was burnt down during an attack and classrooms and dormitories were ransacked. She says violence usually creates fear and panic among children who at times see their schools as a danger zones or places to avoid.
We talk a lot these days about military withdrawals and redeployments and counterterrorism operations in the region. But it's very important to remember that the scars of this conflict extend well beyond the battlefields. We see children in the medium to long term who are massively impacted by the violence they've witnessed to an extent that takes a heavy toll on their well-being, their learning abilities in school, and their outlooks for the future.
She says some form of education is usually introduced for children at displacement sites, but most of them do not have access to any formal or informal education. Those who have access are sometimes unable to find their way back to the classroom. She says there are extreme cases where children experience casualties from attacks and access to basic social amenities is a challenge.
Some of these children have lived through situation of siege where they've lacked food for months. Many don't have access to an education there because often schools have closed as civil servants and state workers fled. So we're talking about very concrete impacts on their daily lives. We have parents saying they had to cut down on the meals given to children because the markets were closed, the shops were empty. So that's another form of violence. And then when they do try to leave those conflict-affected areas, families can go through days of walking to reach a safer place.
Olivisi says 9 out of 10 children indicate that they have issues dealing with fear, trauma, and anxiety. She says stress and anxiety are manifested in various ways depending on the child, noting that children who experience trauma often isolate themselves. They have hard time connecting with their peers, classmates, and teachers, and they tend to stay on their own, not in interacting in ways that are conducive for teaching and learning.
We were told by several headmasters and teachers in both Burkina Faso and Niger that, for instance, the mere sound of a motorbike passing by a classroom could send some of these children into panic mode, because for them the sound of a motorbike can be the sign of an imminent attack. So some of these children would react instantly by jumping out of their seat, rushing for the door, and trying to go and hide. It shows how in a classroom, daily life can be disrupted by something as simple as a motorbike, because that's been associated in their minds to attacks by non-state armed groups.
She says the challenge for most teachers is to get children to focus and learn after disruptions that create fear and panic. This is how they can integrate the children and assure them of their safety. She says teachers in these areas need to be trained and equipped to help children to go through trauma or any kind of situation. Olisi says there is also a need for psychosocial programming as part of the school curriculum, which would help affected students experiencing panic attacks. She says in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, the educational sector, despite being so much in need, receive the least funding. She notes that international support for the countries is lacking. For example, last year's humanitarian response plan for the three countries appealed for $108 million, but only $13 million was dispersed. She says funding needs to be scaled up for more psychosocial programming in education if the children are to regain access to safe schooling and better futures. Reporting for VOA, this is Mary Zotri in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
In South Africa, police say almost 7,000 people were murdered and more than 11,000 women and girls raped in the final 90 days of 2021. Opposition parties say this horrific statistic shows the country is effectively a war zone, no longer controlled by the ruling African National Congress, but by violent criminals. Darren Taylor has more.
Out of 6,859 people killed in the country, 902 of them were women and 352 were children. 232...
Police Minister Becky Cele reads South Africa's latest crime statistics. Lists of numbers of people killed in homicides, carjackings, armed robberies, and other violent crimes. Opposition parties say the rainbow, once the emblem of hope in a country nurtured to democracy by Nelson Mandela, is now soaked in blood. The numbers say 75 people are murdered and 125 women raped every day in South Africa. University of Stellenbosch criminologist Guy Lam says murder is always the best indicator of a country's crime problem, not only because it's such a serious offence, but because it's a crime that's always reported, unlike rape, for example.
If we look at the five-year period, that's where it gets really worrying. So that's been a 21% increase from 2017, 2018 up until 2020-21. That's absolutely massive. I mean, seeing a similar trend around attempted murder of 17% over that five-year period, and if you look at carjacking, it's more than 30%. So there are some very worrying trends.
A survey by Statistics South Africa shows almost 80% of South Africans don't feel safe in their own homes and feel besieged by criminals. Immigration agencies report there's unprecedented interest from South Africans wanting to leave the country. Property consultants say there's been a 40% jump in citizens wanting to buy property in other countries in the last 3 months. This flight syndrome, as they put it, is driven by fear of crime and also a 35% unemployment rate, the highest in the world. Opposition parties say those with the money to do it are fleeing one of the most unequal, unstable, and dangerous countries in the world.
I was awoken by a sound that the police later described to me was the cocking of the gun.
A victim of a recent home invasion reads a statement to VOA about her experience.
The one attacker said, This man is a killer, and he is here to kill you. My husband never even got the chance to get up off the couch. They started shooting. They shot him 5 times right next to me on the couch. He rolled off the couch, hitting the floor. At that stage, my daughter, who was 6, put up her little hand and she said, I've got money. You can take my money. I've got a piggy bank.
The woman says the 3 assailants stole only 2 cell phones and a laptop. Professor Lam says citizens don't trust the police to protect them to such an extent that people now take the law into their own hands.
There's often residents who have lost things of value and have a bit of resources often use non-state groups to get their stuff back. And this is quite common. You'll see sort of taxi drivers and taxi associations engaging in kind of vigilante acts to reclaim stolen goods from individuals that are known to have stolen this. And then, of course, there would be violence that would be meted out on the person who stole the stuff.
He says the police are understaffed, poorly equipped, badly trained, and demoralized.
What we see in many communities where there's loss of faith in the police is that, you know, the police are unprofessional, that they don't respond, they don't come when they're called. The bottom line comes down to if you treat residents with respect and you try to make a difference, then you'll see residents working with you, trying to support you, trying to cooperate with you, report crime as they see you as a valuable community resource. Because in many areas, the police aren't seen as a community resource.
In South Africa, private security guards now outnumber police officers by 2-to-1. As the government slashes policing budgets. Mental health professionals say South Africans are increasingly numbed to the violence around them, not wondering if, but when, they'll be the next statistic. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Ihayes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
The Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins the forces with Africa's premier men's basketball league to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the field in Senegal, Egypt, and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7 FMs and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny.